Hello and welcome to the Best of the Sound of Football 2016. My name is Chris Oakley and I'm here once again to bring you a selection of the best clips from over a year of football podcasting, courtesy of Graham Sibley, Terry DeFellin and Jan Bilton. Coming up later on, there's the biennial treat known to many as Laughing at the Sound of Football's Tournament Predictions, plus there's something a bit different for all you music lovers out there. And boy do we mean different. But to begin with, we go back to the first Sound of Football of 2016. The year began in sad circumstances following the deaths of both Jimmy Hill and Don Howe, two men whose contribution to English football cannot be overlooked. Episode 239 of The Sound of Football saw Terry looking back on Hill's illustrious career, one that had its ups and downs, but ultimately brought innovation and improvement to football not just in England, but around the world.
Just a couple of things on Jimmy Hill. It's probably worth bearing in mind, Fulham fans obviously remember him as a player, but they won't have thanked him for the time in which he owned the club. Because I mean, the club were in a very bad way while he was the chairman of the club, and Charlton fans will not in any way thank him for his role in their leaving the Valley back in the 1980s and moving to Selhurst Park, which is a very sore point.
I think that's the thing. I mean, with Jimmy Hill was the fact that nearly everything in modern football stems from decisions that he's made.
Yeah.
So everything about the towards that television having such an important role to the exorbitant wages that players are paid, or the changes that are made in football. So you know, to bring in innovation, which obviously a lot of people like and enjoy, and it brings new people to the game, but also people who are already in the game are against.
Yeah.
So
all-seater stadia.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Coventry City went all-seater well before, but he was a big proponent of that prior to that. And I think on the basis that it would attract, shall we say, a different type of fan. Yeah. And again, not everyone. In the 90s, my favourite Jimmy Hill broadcast moment, and there are many, is the FA Cup final 1992, Liverpool v Sunderland. I don't know whether you remember, well, you'll remember the game, but I don't know whether you remember this moment. But obviously, your mind would have been elsewhere. But when he's in there with Des Lynam and Bob Stokoe and Alan Hansen, who's as a pundit fresh out of nappies, and Bob Stokoe is not coping at all, and Jimmy Hill trolls Alan Hansen and Des Lynam into trying to convince everyone that this blatant penalty that Steve McManaman should have been given was a blatant penalty in the first half, was not a no. And he kept using the expression, if you look at the angle of intent, and it was winding up Hansen so much. And I remember it well because I remember it wound me up. I remember being furious and saying, you're an idiot, Jimmy Hill, you're an idiot, Hull. As in the early 20s. You think you know it all, don't you? And it's only years later.
Twitter had been around.
I mean, if you think back, I think back on it now, and I think that this guy was being a pro. He was like going, you know, nothing's happened in this game apart from this one incident. Everyone else is either green or has just dried up. So I now have to carry this for the next 5 minutes. We're going to have to find something to talk about.
Yeah.
And by George, he did. And you know, I think back on it now with a certain degree of admiration for his broadcasting skills to be able to do that. He would have, I mean, it's a tragedy because obviously it's Alzheimer's robbed him of his final years. Mm. He would have owned Twitter, on football on Twitter. He would have owned it. If you guys follow William Shatner and the way that William Shatner carries on Twitter, just really just cussing and knocking down people who think that they are in his own field, Jimmy Hill would have been just like that. He'd have absolutely owned it well into his 80s.
Yeah.
Next up came a discussion about whether Manchester United's style of play was becoming a little bit, well, boring. Did we all take for granted the silky skills of Beckham, Giggs and Scholes back in the day? And have we any right to expect the current crop of Man United players to perform at the same level? Come to think of it, are football fans expecting to be entertained all of the time these days, no matter which team they support? Here's Jan in episode 240, explaining how the expectations of fans are on the rise. And not entirely for the greater good.
I think the problem is, I don't know whether it's society or just the way things have gone, but people expect things very, very quickly. They expect instant gratification. Look how we communicate in social media.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be able to read that in one tweet. I mentioned Spotify earlier. They've changed the way music is played now. You don't have intros now in a lot of songs because people just listen to the first few bars and then just skip past it. So you look at all the recent hits, because people just want it instantly.
Mm.
And so they just want goals to pull that into football. And I think that that's what You know, the press pick up on that because they know what you know the zeitgeist is. Mm. I want more goals. I just want to see goals, and that pressure then goes on to you know a team that's expected to be thumping them in. Mm. And I think that you know you might see more and more and more pressure on lots of different managers and clubs. And I think actually you might ultimately see some people start to move away from football because I think the attention span of people is starting to shrink. And to sit there for two sets of 45 minutes and see no goals, some people will find that a real turn-off. I don't.
No.
I think that's the best way to spend two sets of 45 minutes. But I think that because of the way things are and people expect things so quickly that that you will you may well see people move away from it.
Good. Sod off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't come back.
But I think that's part of the problem, and I think that creates the pressure.
Hmm. I was reading today that in the newspaper.
Wow!
I didn't actually read the newspaper. I was reading the online version of the newspaper, and they were talking about the fact that the draw for the fourth round of the FA Cup was boring. There wasn't any interesting fixtures in it.
And, right. Well, I mean, in fairness, Crystal Palace did get drawn at home with Stoke. So, you know, I've got some sympathy for that.
And I think, isn't that the only All Premier League? I think there are a couple of others pending replays, but I think that was the only one that came out the hat.
I've got to be honest with you, I've not looked at the rest of the draw. Yeah. I saw Palace's draw and I just stormed off in a huff. I mean, I should point out, I was alone in my office looking at the video there, so I was storming out from no one. No one was there to see me storm out. Maybe my cat. Yeah. So I don't know why I stormed off in a huff, but I did storm off in a huff, and I haven't actually had the opportunity to look
see,
at
this yet. Is it. This is modern work.
It's people like me,
world,
yeah.
It,
yeah, yeah.
Like, where people think that it is their right to storm off in a huff, even when there's no one else there. It's going to affect.
Indeed. And I suppose that's probably why I decided to mention it now, just so that I could get some, you know, acknowledgement that this is what happened. Didn't
yeah,
it?
Unfortunately, really, that has not really happened, has it, really?
No, it's not happened at all. I don't feel in any way vindicated or modified.
Yes. Are you feeling mocked?
I feel a little silly, actually, yeah. I feel a little bit silly.
You should definitely feel mocked.
Boring FA Cup draws is... You know, I think Palace always get knocked out in, like, the first... fourth round, maybe if they're lucky they get to the fifth round. So when the draw comes up, it's like excitement, we're in the draw, and then it's always disappointing. I mean, the thing is, we could have drawn Man United at home and they'd probably have gone, oh, we'll never get through the next round now, so I'm never happy with the draw.
Yes, many of you won't have missed the irony there of Terry's disappointment at Crystal Palace being given a tough draw against Stoke in the FA Cup, just four short months before reaching the final where they played Manchester United. It's a tough life being a Crystal Palace fan. On to episode 241 now, and a nostalgic walk down memory lane to remember the great football radio shows of yesteryear. In discussing such things, it's never usually all that long before someone mentions the master of the football phone-in, Danny Baker. And so it came to pass in the third Sound of Football of 2016. Here's Graham and Terry assessing the legendary 606 show on BBC Radio, along with Jan, who very nearly got to speak to Danny Baker himself.
As we know... people are interested in listening to other people's football opinions.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, people listen to this podcast, amazingly.
Yeah, this is what we do instead of phoning 606.
We would be phoning in 606 and we would sound just as deranged and wrong because the podcast gives us context for our opinions.
I reckon international listeners will know
what 606 is.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a phone-in programme that starts at 6:06 on Radio 5 after the football coverage.
Right.
Started by Danny Baker.
Yes, and it's ages old now, isn't it?
And
it's nothing new, is it? In
the early 90s. I mean, that's why I think international listeners are across it. Mm. I'd like to also think that international, particularly that, you know, that international listeners listen to Radio 5. Because obviously the internet now, you can do.
Yeah. Yes.
You can listen to it. And I wonder whether or not they do. And that would be interesting to hear their experiences, or their own thoughts on that, particularly from overseas.
Mm. I actually called in to a Danny Baker phone-in show one
time.
Did you? Yeah, it wasn't 6:06. He did, because he was, I mentioned Chris Evans earlier, and Absolute Radio Virgin as it was then. I think he had a show that kind of led into rock and roll footballer, certainly got a warm up kind of in the middle of the day, and he was talking about footballers. You know, he always does a crazy phone in topic, and he was talking about footballers who had let themselves go after they'd retired. And they'd pile on a bit of timber, which is the first time I've heard that expression. That made me chuckle. So anyway, I can't even remember who it was I rang in about. Anyway, I rang up, spoke to the producer, and he went, "Yeah, that's a brilliant one. Yeah, we'll give you a call back. Yeah, we'll definitely get you on." I went, "Oh, brilliant, that's great." So I sat there listening for a bit, and then the phone rang, and I picked it up like, "Hello," all excited. And it was my mate calling from America. And I was like, oh, and I hadn't spoken to him for ages. And it was around 2001. So there was a lot of stuff happening in the world. And he was in America. So I couldn't kind of go, "I'm about to be on the radio. So
I'm waiting for Danny Baker to call
me back. Can we just forget about all this shit that's happening in the world? Because I'm about to talk about fat footballers." I passed up my chance of starting.
It's your moment.
Yes.
And join us next week when we'll be talking for half an hour on fat footballers.
There's a topic.
Well, Danny Baker did it for about 3 hours. Yeah. It was brilliant.
He can.
At the start of February, I made my first appearance of the year on The Sound of Football and covered old ground. Actually make that old grounds plural, because Graham, Jan and I discussed the old stadia left behind once football clubs moved to new premises. Sometimes an old stadium becomes a little bit too decrepit to be of any use, and therefore a move to a sparkly new venue becomes something of a necessity, but it's all too easy to dismiss decades of history and wonderful memories. This was never more the case than with the old Wembley Stadium, as were discussed in this clip from episode 243.
Well, I suppose the most famous rebuild was Wembley, though, wasn't it?
It was. Again, that was very political as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's because it went on so long.
Yes.
Yeah, it went on forever. And they got rid of an athletic stadium because they didn't have athletics there for years. And then when they decided to build a new one, the athletics people said, can we run around it?
No, just for football.
It's just for football. Go away.
Didn't they used to have greyhound racing as well at Wembley?
They've had greyhound racing. They had speedway. They've had stock cars there. I remember seeing stock cars at Wembley when it was a figure eight.
Across the pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Right around there. It was a figure eight. And I think it didn't even Evel Knievel. Didn't he jump over his double-decker buses at Wembley?
Famously at Wembley Stadium, yes, that's right. He came down one stand at one end and went over and crashed at the other end, practically where the goal mouth was.
Yeah. I don't know who did.
And they wonder why the new Wembley Stadium isn't making a profit. I mean, that's what they're missing out.
See, yeah, this was the 1970s kids, and you could do stuff like that. Yeah.
There was no such thing as health and safety back then. What I want to do is I want to ride my bike down a massive ramp across this entire stadium. Yeah, no problem. How much we're going to charge for a ticket? Yeah.
Obviously, that's why he came to London, because we had all the double-decker buses. So he was just sort of like, I really need to jump over some double-decker buses. Single-decker buses, they don't present that much of a challenge to me.
Yeah, you couldn't have gone to Holland, did you? Yeah, trams, they're no problem. It's got to be London.
Yeah, but I think he failed. He did clear them, he just didn't land properly, did he? I think he didn't
quite think that one through, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, landing, yes, of course. Stupid.
It's amazing you didn't ask anybody with a brain and just what they thought might happen.
Terry was back for episode 244, which came shortly after Liverpool fans had staged a protest at the club's plans to increase ticket prices. Remarkably, the fans got their way as Liverpool Football Club backed down. But over on the continent, other fans were staging their own unique protests, as heard here on this clip from mid-February.
Now, it's not been the only protest this week, is it? Because over in Germany,
indeed,
there was a tennis ball protest.
There was indeed a tennis ball.
Terry, can you tell us more about that?
Oh, my God, animals.
It started off as, it was two protests in the same game. So Stuttgart charged 35, 36 euro on average for away tickets for BVB fans for the German Cup quarterfinal game that was staged last night. That in Germany is a lot of money for an away ticket. Mm. And it marks a trend of German club fans travelling away being charged over the odds in the opinion of the travelling fans, for attending matches. And it's not just Dortmund, it's any of the big, well-supported clubs who are likely to bring lots of fans with them. So Bayern, Schalke, and others as well. And so in protest, Dortmund staged a 20-minute boycott. And just like the Bayern fans did against Arsenal, they didn't enter the ground until 20 minutes, until a certain arbitrary time in. So 20 minutes because it's in relation to the Kainsfarni protest, from which started in 2010, which is a protest movement similar to the SFF's 2020, Kainsfarni, which means no more than 20 euro for an away ticket. Mm. And it's, so yeah, similar line. I would imagine that perhaps FSF started it very much with that in view.
Yeah.
So it was very much in that, and they put a big banner up saying, you know, when will the people of Stuttgart understand football must be affordable? A few minutes later, it was followed up by a tennis ball protest, which was staged by a big ultra group called the Unity, in which they hurled loads and loads and loads of tennis balls onto the ground. And the significance of this is that tennis is regarded in Germany, as I'm sure it is over here, as a rich man's sport, as a rich person's sport. And that again, so therefore reinforcing this idea that, you know, that football is not a sport for rich people. It's a sport for working class, for poor people, poor men, let's face it. And so this was a sort of symbolic gesture to throw these tennis balls onto the pitch.
It's a good job it wasn't darts.
And it's a good job it wasn't darts. And it's a good job that darts is not a rich man's sport.
Yeah. Or dog fighting.
Dog fighting, indeed, or clay pigeon shooting. or first strike nuclear capability. You know, these things are all good, so it's only tennis. So it's very funny. It doesn't go down very well, but I mean, these tennis balls, I mean, they're harmless, obviously, they're not going to hurt anybody. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's such an effective protest, because they bounce and, you know, they move through the air nicely and they don't do any damage.
I bet it looked quite comical as well, didn't it?
Henry Mkhitaryan tried to take a corner in the corner where the photo was, and this is a Dortmund midfielder, and he did. After a while, another ball sort of flew past his ear. He went, he sort of looked round at them, and he said, I'm just trying to do my job here. Will you please go away? But of course, he can't, because that would be hugely undiplomatic.
I imagine if they did that here. I mean, like, the goal line technology would go nuts, wouldn't it? Well, like, beeping off like nobody's business.
I must confess, when I was sitting there, I felt like a right Herbert, thinking, they get all these balls into the stadium. I mean, like, we would never get those balls in the stadium in an English ground. They would be like, what are you doing with all these balls? Like, how did you get them in the first place? But, you know, I don't want to know where they got them, where they put them while they were going through security. Dumped. But, I mean, they don't, I don't think they do vigorous body searches.
Do you have any balls on you, sir?
Yeah, well, when you get, cane ball. Cane ball.
Maybe they had them all disguised as parts of Pringles.
Maybe they did.
A lot of people are bringing in parts of Pringles, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got to say, these tennis balls look like the kind of balls that you nick from your council, sort of like, you know, municipal ones that have been, you know, been chewed by a dog. You know, I mean, they didn't look like new balls, pardon the pun, to me.
Ahead of episode 245, the outgoing FA chairman, Greg Dyke, made clear his views on how to improve the popularity of the FA Cup. Among the ideas suggested was a move towards having more FA Cup fixtures played in midweek and the abolition of replays. So, had the time now come for a wholesale shift in the format of the world's oldest cup competition, and was it still possible to make the FA Cup as popular as it once was? As ever, the Sound of Football was on hand to provide some views of its own, and to table a few original ideas too.
What I would say, though, is no extra time, straight to penalties.
Right, yeah. No, I do like, I love a penalty shootout in which the players are exhausted mentally and physically.
Yeah, but thinking of is to just try and keep that little bit of parity left in the competition. I mean, if you are going to do away with replays, you've got to have something there that's going to allow clubs to go through. And I think, you know, two clubs can be tight together after 90 minutes, but give it an extra half an hour, and it's the teams with the better fitness level, the better training, that have got a slight advantage, especially coming up to a penalty shootout. It's very easy to say penalty shootout is 50-50, you know, it's a lottery.
No, it's not.
It's not really,
penalties
is it?
Are not a lottery.
No, they're not.
Penalties are not a lottery. They're a test of skill and nerve.
You can't get a lucky dip for a penalty. Actually, it'd be great if you could. Just go like, right, just give a pound. And let's
lotteries, lotteries are lotteries. Yeah. Penalty shootouts aren't lotteries.
Yeah, flipping a coin. That's almost a lottery.
Yeah, that attitude that we have towards penalties, that they are a lottery, is a reason why we keep losing them. Because we don't take them seriously.
Yeah,
enough.
If they were a lottery, we would have won a few by now.
Anyway, yeah, very good point. To return to the point, yeah. What do you think, Graham? You must have an opinion.
Things have changed in the FA Cup. They've changed quite a lot. But the perceived devaluation of the FA Cup isn't down to the fact that we don't have replays in the final or the semi-finals anymore. It's because there are shinier baubles to be had.
Bigger fish to fry.
Yes. And I think that's the problem. The League Cup, as you're rightly saying, why is it there? Mm. Why was it ever there? I mean, I don't think anyone really gave it too much bother. I mean, I remember when the final wasn't even on live. That was on a Saturday 3.
Yeah.
When Forest were winning. And I think it was only during in the mid-80s when that suddenly became another game that you could see on the telly. So I've thought for a long time that the League Cup should be for teams that aren't in Europe.
Like the old ZDS Cup.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? The
Basically, yeah. Cup, yeah.
Which Palace are proud winners of, by the way.
But, yeah, you know, if you're going to be fighting on a European front, which now means that you are going to be having a league stage now, usually with your Europa League now as well as the Champions League, then certainly, you know, you are going to be tied up, aren't you? Yeah.
Would you give the winner a Europa League spot though? Would you still bestow a Europa League spot on it? Because I would argue that if you don't, then you may as well scrap it, because then it becomes the full Members' Cup.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, the Johnson, the JP is a sort of legacy from that, isn't it? The JP is actually what survived. It's the full Members' Cup was the top two divisions, and that's gone, long gone. But the Associate Members' Cup, or the JP as it's now popularly known, has remained.
Do you know what?
I've just had
a brilliant idea for the League Cup.
Go on.
Right. Okay, right. What you get is it's the Premier League aren't involved in it at all. It is actually the Football League Cup.
Mm.
So it goes to be in the Football League Cup. So you've got the 72 teams there. Yeah. Right? They all fight for it. Right? The winner gets a place in the Championship playoffs, no matter where they're from.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, that's a brilliant idea. That is a brilliant idea.
So the Championship playoffs, there's only three places there, plus the winner of the League Cup. So a team from League Two suddenly going bang.
York City.
Yeah,
so that shot in the title. It's like Apollo against Rocky.
Amazing.
That would be great.
That would be amazing.
Brilliant.
That is the best idea I've ever heard about football.
Yeah.
And now the League Cup suddenly becomes
Everyone loves the League Cup.
Everyone. The 22nd of February 2016, a date that may not have any particular distinction as far as you, our valued listener, are concerned. But that was the date on which David Cameron announced there would be a referendum on whether the UK would remain a member of the European Union. The announcement set the entire country abuzz at what might happen after the vote in June, and the Sound of Football team were understandably just as distracted as they tried to envisage a post-Brexit Premier League if the UK were to leave the EU. The trouble was, nobody quite knew what would happen in those circumstances back in February. So many questions, but so few answers. If only there was some way of knowing what would happen in 4 months' time.
Okay, well, look, this subject, we're clearly like at a stage where we don't really know what's going to happen. There's only one way we're going to find out what's going to happen, though, isn't there?
You're not going to do it again, are you?
Yeah. Come on.
We're out.
They had two sequels. Why don't we have one as well? Look, come on, we can all get in the DeLorean.
Yep, we can all squeeze in. Yeah.
It's been a few months.
I've got my book here.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's all right. Stick it under my arm.
Right. So, look, I think we should just go forward. I think we only need to go forward 5 years, don't we?
Really?
Yeah.
How long do you think it's going to take effect, all of this stuff? Okay, let's say 5 years in.
I think once all the contracts have run out and everything like that. So
2021, 1 year before the Qatar World Cup.
Great. Well, we're going to be in such a good position. Either way.
Okay.
Right, okay, so, hey, we've got to get up to 88 miles an hour, okay? I don't know what that is in kilometres per hour, so...
Who cares? Up yours, Delors. Yeah, miles per hour, that is.
Yeah, miles per hour, right, here we go. Here we are, right, 2021. Yeah, I think I'll drive around the block a while before I jump.
Don't let those wheels stop spinning.
White Leaf's gone a bit downhill, isn't it?
it's like Dante's Inferno around here, isn't it?
No, it looks fine. Stop complaining. Everything's great. Now, look. All right, okay, now what have we got to do? We've got to find out what happened, okay? So obviously... You know, check your phones, see if there's... have you got any signal? Have you got any signal there?
Actually, no, I've got no service here. Absolutely not, no.
Well,
no.
I've got this newspaper stand.
Newspaper stand?
There's a newspaper.
Yeah. Wait, have we gone back in time? There's always a newspaper stand. Yes,
there's always a newspaper stand when you get out of a DeLorean.
Yes.
Stupid.
And the headline's going to be 6 years ago, 5 years ago.
this thing has sold newspapers.
Right.
Now
yes.
Everyone's got tablets. Yeah. But do we?
We do know. Yeah, see, we're on a different timeline now.
Oh, no. Yeah, my phone doesn't work either.
Something seriously has gone
badly right, hasn't it?
Yeah,
there were people back then saying it would take us back 30 years. Mm. What did they know?
The tavern's open. Why don't we go in there and... the football's still on. Why don't we go in there and watch the last 5 minutes of the football?
What a good idea.
Yeah,
I'll get him in. What do you want?
Something British, please.
Yeah. Hang about. Looks like that's all they've got.
Okay. Just as well then.
St George's Stout, St George's Lager, or St George's Best Bitter. That's all they've got.
They haven't got any Scottish stuff. Oh, sorry. Well, I'm sorry we got chased out of that pub for mentioning Scotland. Anyway, there's a pub over here. We'll go in that one and see whether I like it.
Ah, right, okay then. Well, look, they've got a big screen and it's got some telly on as well.
It has, yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay, football match.
Yeah.
Well, look, everything is the same, look. Yeah. Same, look.
There are a lot of white players.
An awful lot of white players. But they are all wearing baggy shorts, though.
They're all white, aren't they?
Yes, and they've got greased back hair. Look at the size of their boots.
Yeah. Oh, and they're being quite violent to each other as well.
Good.
But look.
They can't pass the ball as well. Yeah.
That guy who got punched, he didn't suddenly jump up and start waving his hand around with an imaginary card in his hand, did he?
Yeah, no. It's got good British values. You know what, I think the Daily Mail might have been right. It is actually better.
It
was in the 50s.
We imagine the 50s to be.
Yes. Preston North End and Huddersfield playing each other in the Premier League. Look at that, see?
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is what we wanted.
This is what we wanted, yeah.
Oh, we should have voted this out.
Beer's disgusting.
Video technology. The concept that appears to be a panacea for all that's wrong in the game. From goal line disputes to incorrect offside decisions and even off-the-ball incidents... The use of video technology has been called for by many for some time. Around the start of the year, however, FIFA finally gave its approval for English football to start trialling new systems that would assist match officials. But why have we suddenly reached a point whereby referees simply aren't allowed to get things wrong anymore? The Sound of Football team discussed the issue at great length, although some views had to be reassessed for clarification and correctness.
Who on earth would oppose video technology? And who doesn't want to be right?
Who doesn't want to be right?
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I like being right.
And so do I. But
sometimes I'm wrong. And that's okay.
No.
Should we say that again?
Can we
say that again from a different angle?
I think that's better.
Yeah. So we should review what Jan has just said.
Yeah. Sorry,
to make certain that what he said was right.
Let's just go through that again.
Let's go through this in slow motion.
Yeah, okay. I like being right. And I'm always right.
There you are. You see? That's fine. So it's fine once we replayed it.
Yeah, it's fine. I swear I didn't say anything else.
No. However, I have this recording here. And Terry, if I take this really slowly, listen to these words coming out of his mouth.
Sometimes.
I mean, you can clearly say that is the voice of heresy.
Well, if you look at it from that, if you listen to it from that angle, yes, then that certainly is a very, very wrong opinion.
That's just one person's interpretation of that angle.
No, that's heresy.
I think we should spend the next half an hour just discussing what Jan has just said and reviewing it and replaying it until, you know, everybody dies of boredom.
Well, yes, to be honest with you, I can't believe that Graham got that wrong. That's unbelievable. I mean,
hey, that's
podcasting at this level,
it's
you should be getting it right every time.
Here for, you see? That's why we...
It's here to help podcasters make the right opinions.
Yes.
Yeah, but what about...
Not to show up how crap I am.
what about podcasts that don't have the ability to have the technology deployed?
Well, no one's interested in them, are they? Face it. Yeah. Come on.
So it's only the best, the top-class podcasts that have the ability to re-review what was said.
Of course, everyone would like this to be spread out of everywhere, but it's just not practical, is it?
No, you've got to be realistic.
Yeah, you have to be realistic.
You have to be realistic, and you have to replay every single controversial moment or opinion that's stated in a podcast, you know, until you get it right.
Yes.
And then there'll be nothing more to say.
Yes.
Hmm.
For episode 249, Graham donned his deerstalker and attempted to resolve one of football's greatest mysteries, namely that which saw the Jules Rimet trophy being stolen just before the start of the 1966 World Cup. Even to this day, no one knows for sure who did take the World Cup trophy. A number of parties were suspected, including known criminals, the mob, and even the South African Secret Service. All that is known is that a similar case of art napping from around the same time bore all the hallmarks of the World Cup robbery. Chief Inspector Graham Sibley takes up the story.
On New Year's Eve, 1966, early hours, someone breaks into Dulwich Gallery and makes off with 8 Old Masters, worth then about £1.5 million. So could be £100 million in modern money.
Yeah.
If they were to go on sale now. Same thing again. A day later, there's a telephone call to say, give us £100,000 or these go on the fire. The only problem is these pictures aren't insured, so there's no insurer there
to
pay up. And there's only the trustees of Dulwich Gallery, and all they can get is £1,000.
Yes,
they probably did a cake baking sale.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But luckily, someone does have a sniff at that and goes, yeah, all right, I'll have that. And a guy called Thornton phones up and says, go to a flat in West Kensington and you'll find your pictures. And so they go to this flat, they find 2 blokes there with 3 pictures, and they say, well, we don't know where these come from. Someone came around and dropped them off.
Right.
But it's in the press that they've recovered 3 of the pictures. But they don't give any details about how they got there or who they've taken or what they've done with the people who are there. A couple of days later, a package wrapped up in newspaper and string is found under a bush.
By a dog?
By a dog.
Really?
By a man with a dog.
By a man with a dog.
I was only joking.
No way.
In a part of Streatham Common called the Rookery. Now, Streatham Common is actually, that part is about 15 minutes walk from where the World Cup was found.
Right.
So clearly, South London was the place to return stolen goods.
Yes.
If you were a criminal with a conscience and you thought, you know, this is not the life for me, it's about time I found a, you know, go and get a job in Woolies.
Yeah, but as with the World Cup as well, no one was fingered for the theft of that. Someone like Betchley was arrested for handling it, but no one was done for theft. But I reckon whoever was responsible for the theft at Dulwich was responsible for the World Cup theft.
So, naming no names, and on that bombshell, I think it's probably about time that we wrap that one up in newspaper and hide it under a bush
for
a dog to find it.
this week's advert will not be dropped in the usual way. You might have to work a little bit harder to find it. Sorry about that.
At the end of March, The Sound of Football celebrated its 250th episode, and to mark such an auspicious occasion, I was invited back to join Graham, Jan and Terry for the landmark recording. And all very well and good, except I had no idea they were laying a trap. Unbeknown to me, I was lured into a situation whereby we'd all have to predict which 3 teams would be relegated from the Premier League. It's almost like I've humiliated them in the past about their predictions or something. Anyway, I'm pleased to say it didn't work. I came through that episode with flying colours. Check out the evidence.
So who's going down then? Come on, we can make this prediction. No, this is the time we can make predictions because Chris is here.
Well, we don't make predictions here on the Sound of Football. Because, Chris is here, so it's
because
fine.
If Chris is here, then he has to make predictions as well.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yes. Oh.
Yes, and we want objectivity when it comes to end of year reviews.
Yeah. No fancy dancy editing.
You're just getting cocky, Graham, because you got it so right last time. Oh no, it was you got it right. It was Terry who got it right. Was it in the World Cup? I seem to remember.
I don't think any of us can really claim to have got anything right back in the World Cup. Yeah. Okay, well, look, you know, I'm going to say it. I think Palace are going to get relegated.
Oh, really? You really think that?
Yeah. That's a long way to go.
So who's the worst team in the Premier League right now?
Aston Villa.
No. The worst team in the Premier League right now is Crystal Palace. Aston Villa have taken 3 points in 2016.
Right.
Crystal Palace have taken 2 points in 2016. If it wasn't for the fact that they had that fantastic first half of the season, they would be lower. They would be minus bottom. They would be underneath Aston Villa, but Aston Villa would still be bottom. They
already
would
be relegated. Sort of like
they would actually be, you know, a Paul's panel would have relegated them. In sheer disgust and contempt.
Yeah, you'd have people looking at that table thinking, have they gone into administration or something?
Yeah, that's right. Given a tax deduction, and they're watching, looking at it on some website where the website isn't capable of registering minus points. It's just not able to do it, and so it just sits there in this kind of sort of like slightly offset, and all the formatting's all completely messed up. Because the fans will be over some advert, some betting shop advert, and it's completely unjustified. Now that is where Palace would be.
Unjustified Palace.
Totally unjustified Palace. So I think Palace, when I suspect, well, obviously Villa, I mean, you would think they're going to go down. And I don't know, I'm sort of torn, because I think Norwich might, I think it could be Villa, Newcastle and Crystal Palace. I think Sunderland are going to turn it around, even though they haven't had that bounce that Big Sam has given them. And I think that there's a little bit more to Norwich.
Chris, what about you? Yes. What do you think for who's going to go down out of the Premier League this season?
I think Villa.
Yeah. Oh, well done. just a round of applause for Chris there.
Insight.
I've been studying the form, and I'm here to tell you that Villa. Okay.
I'm writing out my betting slip now.
Newcastle, absolutely. And I'm going, and I'm not just saying this because Jan's here, but I'm saying Sunderland staying up and Norwich going down. I don't know why. I just think that Sunderland are just gritting it out week by week. And I just think Norwich's form is a little bit more erratic than Sunderland's. It's just a hunch. And I don't think there's a chance in hell Palace will go down, even though they've had such a horrific sort of calendar year so far. I just think they'll pull out a win here and there, get a couple of wins before the end of the season, and that will be enough. But had this run started earlier, then, we could be talking different set of circumstances. But I'm going Villa, Newcastle and Norwich.
The game of football has been played in Britain for well over 150 years, yet even now it still manages to throw up controversial incidents whenever a player is fouled or commits some other offence. The decision about whether players should be punished for their wrongdoings, and if so, what form the punishment should take, remains with the referee, but their task is made all the more complicated when players react with such indignation and fury. To that end, here's Graham asking Terry and Jan how they deal with a particular act of player petulance.
Where do you stand on the waving the imaginary card then?
Oh no, I don't like that at all.
Do you not?
I know, I really don't like that.
Oh god, yeah, I do. I really do.
But do you know why
I love
it? Like it because it gets people het up.
Oh god, yes.
You like it. When you see that happen, you go on Twitter, don't you? Just look, just see the man. Yeah. Well, Jan mainly.
I have to look quite hard for them because they don't hashtag it with seeds on it, which I really hope they
hashtag
would
seed.
Do. Hashtag seeds. Yeah. Well, obviously, they put so many R's in there that they can't fit anything.
You can't accurately work out the correct number of R's in the hashtag for grrr. Much better to go with seeds, listeners. If you're seething next time, go hashtag seeds.
Yes.
And then we'll be able to see you and bask in the glory of your impotent rage.
Yes. Know that you'll have one like from me anyway.
Indeed.
Do you remember years ago, Paul Gascoigne picked up the referee's cards? He dropped them in an Old Firm.
He did, yes.
And he picked up the yellow card, brandished it at the referee, and then handed it to him. And the referee booked him. Yes.
That happened to, I want to say that was Jonas Kulka as well. Was it Jonas Kulka who did that once? No, that was him. That was Jonas Kulka pretending, falling over theatrically at Anfield, which he got booked. But he was aping Liverpool attackers who were falling over.
Right, I see.
And he was demonstrating to the referee that the referee wasn't doing his job properly, right, and that he was giving fouls that didn't exist.
For people falling over.
Yeah.
And then
so he did this theatrical dive back, like that. And then once he got out, the referee said, well, you know, you can have a yellow card for that.
Yeah. And then he went, and that's my point entirely.
Rightly so, taking the piss out of the referee is not on. It's just not on.
See, what I think the referee should do, when it comes to the imaginary card, is the referee should brandish an imaginary card to the person who offended them. So yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, maybe that should be a third card.
Yeah, so there you go.
Imaginary card.
An invisible card.
These guys are telling me to show you an invisible card.
There you go.
All right? Now, on your way.
On your way, yes.
Carry on.
There'll be some invisible disciplinary points that you'll have to explain in front of an invisible FA committee this week.
Yeah, no, twattish behaviour in general is not to be approved of.
But it does make us laugh, as it's just proven.
Before we knew where we were, it was early May, and to the amazement of just about everybody, Leicester City were being crowned Premier League champions. For weeks, fans across England were expecting Leicester's amazing run of good form to come to an end. Yet, week after week, they carried on picking up the points to eventually finish 10 points clear of Arsenal in second. Their extraordinary achievement was all the more remarkable because they claimed their title as a result of Tottenham drawing 2-2 with Chelsea, more than 2 weeks before the season ended. Many of the Leicester players were in Jamie Vardy's kitchen when Tottenham's title charge came to an end, thus prompting The Sound of Football to recall a similar occasion 24 years previously.
I think that's the best way to win a title.
It is a great way to win one.
That's my kind of success.
On the sofa.
I was really pleased that I actually found the bit of video of Leeds winning the title in 92.
Yeah.
John Helm around Lee Chapman's house.
That's right.
And,
yeah.
And there was
I bet that was already messy, was it?
they played in the morning. And so they were like fresh out the shower and sat down at Lee Chapman's house and John Helm was passing around
Eric Cantona was there, wasn't he?
Eric Cantona was on the sofa, as was Dave Batty and Gary McAllister.
Dave Batty desperately trying to look like he gave a shit.
Yeah.
Notoriously not interested in football.
All four of them were on one sofa. It looked a bit cramped.
Did they have the sequence where Elson Wellesby said to Eric Cantona, "Magnifique," and Eric went, "You speak French?" And there was this French girl. Elson goes, "No."
It seems sometimes that the more we watch football, the less we know about it. Not that any of us would admit to that. Mind you, that's pretty much what Terry and Jan did in episode 255. The subject of the podcast was deciders, or more to the point, how to decide the result of a match, or indeed an entire league campaign. Among the many methods discussed was the good old-fashioned away goals rule, a system that's been in place for decades now, but still has the power to confuse and bewilder, as Graham explains.
There is always that thing of when you can see the goal, and then all of a sudden you've got to score three or two or three.
Yeah.
You're not just gone one behind now.
Yeah.
You've effectively gone two behind.
But I love those games when you're a goal down going into the second leg.
Yeah.
And you score two, and yet somehow it doesn't seem to make any difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because, it doesn't make any difference to the opposition team because they've still got to win 1-0 anyway. And you go, what? And I don't even know, I've watched so many European games and I know how this works. And you go, wait, why? Hang on.
I'm really glad you've said that.
You have that kind of small, far away moment. You know?
Yeah, amount of times I've had to explain to myself. And he's going, so who's going to actually win? And I'm going, well, so, think about it. The first leg was 1-0, so now they've scored two. It's half time now. Can we talk about this first?
Go to bed.
Yeah, go to bed. Stop asking stupid questions.
When episode 256 was recorded, it was mid-May and the Premier League season was finally over. Or at least it should have been. 20 minutes before Manchester United's final home game against Bournemouth, a suspect package was found in the toilets in the northwest corner of the Old Trafford Stadium. The entire ground was evacuated and the match was postponed. Luckily, no one was harmed in the incident, and the package was found to be a device left behind by a private company during a previous training exercise. Things could have turned out a lot worse, and the relief was palpable among the Sound football team, but there was also a degree of consternation aimed at the individual that left the fake bomb behind.
You can see what someone did, can't you? They went to the toilet, they put that down, and said, right, I'll just put that down there, did their things, and then obviously, yeah, a couple of minutes later, afterwards. Yeah,
you would have forgot to pick up the fake bomb.
Do you know what? He must have been going home, he must have been sat on the tram on his way home, thinking, what have I forgotten? What have I forgotten? And we've probably thought, oh God, I'm really in trouble when I get home, aren't I?
Mm. I do hope
it's anniversary,
was a,
isn't it, or something like that.
I do hope it's a real fake bomb. It was a black sphere with TNT written on it.
Oh, well, just the word bomb, I
Boom.
With an exclamation mark.
Acme boom. Light and stand well back.
Yeah. Do not return once lit.
Obviously, with some instructions with like Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. And,
Of course, we can laugh, can't we? We can laugh because
it wasn't an actual bomb.
It wasn't actually. It was very, very, very serious at the time, wasn't it?
Of course,
we were right to be very, very serious about it. Yeah. But now, no, it's
now
fun
it's
and
hilarious.
Laughs now it's hilarious. Now someone really, really cocks up.
Yeah, that's right.
Which makes it fine for people like us, you know.
Because we're not the ones who cocked up, and so we're not the ones likely to lose our jobs.
Yes. Yeah. People have very, very low amounts of responsibility in our lives. You know? It's time for people like us to really like have a laugh, especially as it's probably a group of health and safety people.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, they're just up from traffic wardens. Yeah. Like, let's laugh, ridicule them, and hate them.
Okay? Yeah, we've all had health and safety lectures, haven't we? Yes. And we all know how condescending they are.
Yeah.
They're usually former fire officers, aren't they? They've seen such horrors in their life. They've got this very blank expression now and this very blank monotone voice, haven't they?
Yeah, the old 1,000-yard stare.
Yeah. What you've really got to be careful for is any lit flames. If you see a lit flame, do not try and put it out with your hands. It's very, very hot.
Or buckets of petrol.
Did I tell you about... Did I tell you about the time I lifted my friend's face off the ground? He was being burnt by backdraft.
Scarred you the 1970s, hasn't it? It really got to you.
Yeah. Hey, you know, never again. That's why I went into health and safety. Now, where did I put my bomb?
Oh, dear.
Well, where were these people going?
Maureen, have you seen my bomb?
The FA Cup final proved to be a triumphant occasion for Manchester United after a 2-1 extra-time victory over Crystal Palace at Wembley. Yet what should have been a moment of pride and personal satisfaction for United's manager Louis van Gaal instead became one of displeasure as the press chose to question him about his supposedly imminent sacking. Many football fans on Twitter allow themselves a wry smile at the fact that Van Gaal was heading for the exit, having just earned his club their first trophy since the departure of Sir Alex Ferguson. Worse still were the actions of those more creatively minded people on Twitter, who took the fans' humour to a completely new level.
It is amazing how it's happened, though, because really, for the last 3 days on social media, it's been the joke of everyone who tweets anything about football.
That and Alan Pardew's dance, of course.
Yes, that and Alan Pardew's dance. Mm. Been wonderful week for memes, basically, isn't it? It's been like a sort of a very early version of transfer deadline day, isn't it, really?
It's been a gift creator's wet dream.
Oh, it really, really, really has, yes. Yeah. Oh, I love gift creators. People who create gifts. They're just the people who just make life worth living, aren't they?
Not really, no.
No?
No.
No. Mm. No. But there's no podcast equivalent of GIFs, is there really? Can you imagine like just taking a 2 second bit of audio and just making it run on a loop when someone clicked on it?
Well,
that'd be great.
I don't know. It depends whether or not you've got any Easter eggs lined up for the end of the show.
Oh yeah, I think I am. Don't worry, listeners. You're going to have your own version of an audio GIF right at the end of this.
Audio GIFs, that could be a thing, couldn't it?
Whiffs.
Ooh.
That
needs a bit finessing.
Right, now let's see if these sound effects still work. This button should go good, and this one should go excellent. Right, that's that then. It's time to check on our predictions for Euro 2016. yes, at the start of June, the now traditional exercise in humiliating yourself to a potentially worldwide audience was set before you in the form of the Sound of Football pre-tournament prediction show. And how nice it was of Graham, Jan and Terry to invite me onto the podcast to join in the fun. Or were they hoping I'd end up with egg on my face? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, some of you will know the format by now. Basically, what we did is work our way through the first round groups, individually nominating countries to finish in specific positions. From there, we went on to predict the knockout stages and eventually pick an outright winner. But for now, let's see how good our predictions were for those first round groups. Your MC is Graham Sibley, but the poor quality of the guesswork was entirely a group effort.
Where better to start than Group A, do you think?
Group A.
Obviously, there's a standout team, which is France.
Jan, who's going to finish second in that group then?
I think it's obviously a close one between Romania and Switzerland.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go Romania.
Terry, you reckon Albania are going to finish third?
Yeah.
Group B. Jan, come on, tell me a bit about this group.
Can I tell you who I think is going to finish bottom of it? I'd really like to see Wales do well, but I just don't think they've got the legs.
You're not, you're saying fourth. John, I'm going to stick my neck out and say that England are going to finish top of this and they're going to have three wins. Who's going to finish second out of Russia and Slovakia?
Russia are going to finish second.
Why don't you tell us about Group C then, Terry?
I will talk a little bit about the Germans. I have put them top of the group.
Northern Ireland are going to finish second in this group.
So what, Poland in third then?
I'll go for Poland then.
Right, Group D.
Well, since I'm in, I'm going to go with who's going to finish top. I think Spain are going to finish top in this group.
Chris, who's going to finish runners-up in that group?
For the purposes of this exercise, I'll have Czech Republic second.
So we'll have to go with Croatia for third.
Well, we're on to Group E now.
This should be fun.
Well, I mean, I'll go with Belgium top then.
Yeah, and who's going to finish second?
Italy are going to finish second.
Well, who's going to finish third then, Terry?
I'll defer to a colleague and Sweden.
We're up to the last one now. We're up to Group F.
I'm going to make my prediction for the top because I've gone for Austria.
I will go for Portugal second.
Is Iceland going to finish third? I'm going to go for Iceland third.
And as for our overall views of how the tournament would play out, well, here's a small selection for you.
Yeah. Do you think it'll be goalsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think everyone might sort of like make like mini Simeones and try and be defensive?
There'll be a couple of groups will have no goals and they'll have bugger all goals. But some of these will be goal crazy.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's also a case we've made that Spain aren't as strong as they were. Mm. I do think that when they pushed forward with Diego Costa and that backfire, that it's left them taking a bit of a backward step, and that worries me that perhaps they won't go as far in the tournament as maybe the people might expect them to.
I don't think they're even going to get to the final. But hey, that's why they have to play the game. Don't.
That's why they have to play the actual football.
Yeah, that's why they have to do it. Football. Yeah, because really, all these predictions, they're only predictions, aren't they?
They are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some would say guesswork.
Some would say guesswork.
Not you. You know. Work with your copious notes.
But let's face it, there's over...
I'm not the one who had a ring binder to.
Well, there is that.
Talking about me, though, are we?
There is that.
Some call it predictions, some call it guesswork. I call it about 30 minutes of content for the end of year show. That's the way I
look. Yeah, but remember, you're on this show, so you are... Yeah.
So when you come out with the family fortunes, then we know
you
better put some on your own, okay?
Collective responsibility, my friend.
This is why we only do predictions when you're on here.
Despite feeling oppressed by Terry's opposition to my views on the Czech Republic, I maintain that the Czech Republic and Turkey are going to be the two teams you really got to keep your eye on, because I think I'm not saying they're going to win necessarily, but they'll be a long shot. And in my original prediction on my own predictor, I had Czech Republic playing France in the final, so that's how highly I rate them. So, good. Czech Republic, Turkey.
God. Mate, he is a long way away.
He certainly is. Like, you know, many respects.
Despite the somewhat variable accuracy of our predictions, we did actually identify 12 of the teams that went on to reach the last 16, even getting the Germany versus Slovakia match spot on in the first knockout round. In the quarterfinals, however, only three of the teams we thought would be there were actually in the final eight, and in the semi-finals, only two of the last four teams had been picked by us, but we did correctly predict that Germany would play France at that stage of the tournament. Come the final, though, we didn't foresee either Germany or Portugal getting that far, and the less said about that, the better. Anyway, let's turn the clock back to the opening matches of Euro 2016 and episode 260. Jan, Graham and Terry were on hand to review the games they'd seen so far, one of which was Germany's 2-0 win over Ukraine in Group C. The reigning world champions were only assured of their victory when Bastian Schweinsteiger came on late and doubled the Germans' lead in the second minute of injury time. Few would have predicted the Man United midfielder to score such an important goal, not least because of the injury that had sidelined him for most of the previous 3 months. His reward, however, was to be greeted warmly by Jurgi Löw, a dubious honour shared by one of the Sound of Football team.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the way Ozil sort of like, you know, put that in, and a nice early ball, and Schweini just first time for almost
to control
his first
it the
catch,
way it came through. As well, yeah.
Yeah, when you consider he's been, I mean, it's hilarious. I just threw my notes up in the air and just went, ah, you know.
He looked so old when he came on; he wasn't even moving well.
Well, he looked like Reed Richards from Fantastic Four. He's got a great look, but. But, I mean, he'd been injured, he's hardly played, and it was like, why have they picked Schweini and Jurgi Löw? What is he playing at? He's showing excessive loyalty to these players, and, you know, he only comes and pretty much his first touch is to slam home the winner, and his face was just like, wankers.
I was speaking to a Man United supportive friend of mine yesterday. We went to the rained off cricket yesterday, and we were talking about Schweinsteiger, and I just said, didn't he look fresh? Didn't he look? And said, yes, didn't he? Like he didn't have a care in the world, and just came on and scored.
Well, it just goes to show you that when it comes down to team selections, you can trust the coach to have seen the players a lot more than anybody else has. So Jogi Love knows what he's doing.
I'm sure Jogi gave him a firm handshake at the end.
This is the.
I hope he washed his hands.
There is two things I'd like to raise just on that particular issue. I realise it's a bit, you know.
With your hand in your pocket.
Well, the first thing is that Jogi Löw is actually the face of Nivea in Germany. and has recently made a new agreement, signed a new deal.
Sure, it's not E45.
The other thing the other thing on a slightly more personal note is that I have actually shaken hands with Jurgi Löw. I have had the honour of shaking Jurgi Löw's hand. So I'm not quite. I don't know. I think it might actually be that hand as well. So it's a fairly recent habit.
That's brilliant. You couldn't make it up.
You couldn't really, no. What with cameras everywhere?
I mean,
you don't have to make it up anymore.
I do feel sorry for him. I mean, there's nothing wrong with wearing tracksuits. You know, be a tracksuit coach. Much more comfortable.
Some cotton underwear.
Absolutely. You know.
Some talcum powder.
We should all be careful because they're but for the grace of God. Kill us all, you know.
Well, indeed. And listeners, you know, if you're sat at home in your own at the moment, then
who's listeners sat at home in their underwear scratching their bollocks and then saying, oh, yeah, so embarrassing. You know?
For episode 261, Terry and Graham welcomed Andy Rockall onto the podcast to look back on England's third and final group game, a goalless draw against Slovakia. Graham asked Andy, a Tottenham fan and occasional referee, what he thought about the genuine quality of the England squad, and all this while Spain were playing their last group game against Croatia. There was even time to pass judgment on the wackier goalkeeping tactics adopted for penalty kicks. See for yourself.
So what did you think of the Slovakia game?
We have a dearth of wide players that would have probably helped us massively. You've got Sterling, who's just completely out of form. They didn't take Townsend because he's really not performed as you would hope in the last year. Not enough to go to a major tournament. And then we've got the most unbalanced midfield I've ever known as an England fan. Rooney's doing a good job, but I can't see that he should be there. In truth.
He does do that role, doesn't he, for United? But I can't help feeling there are better players in that position.
And he's there for United because basically he's on a stupidly large contract and they've got to play him.
And they've got to play him. It reminds me to a small degree of when Beckham started moving back through the field towards the end.
Oh, yeah, it reminds me a lot of that. When he was the quarterback role.
The quarterback role, which they pretty much created for him and with fairly disastrous effects.
Yeah, because they didn't want to play 4-4-2 anymore.
And they didn't want to drop him.
Yeah.
And I do think that we're not the only country that falls into this trap of perhaps clinging on to players when, you know, there are other solutions around. And, I mean, it is understandable because I imagine that Rooney does offer an awful lot in the dressing room. He is the captain.
Just a break here because Spain have got a penalty. David Silva being bundled down in the box.
David Silva?
Looked a bit soft, but, you know.
Well,
yeah,
they all are.
Is that a soft decision by the defender or the referee?
By the referee. The defender was pushing him with his chest, had his arms up in the air already. And because I can't really hear, my opinions aren't being swayed by the punditry scene. So Glenn Hoddle could be telling me exactly what happened.
Yes, I'm certain that Glenn would be giving an accurate and balanced account of what's going on.
Don't do as I say, do as I do.
I think that was his coaching style throughout the World Cup in '98.
Yeah, that's what we're told.
I grew up watching Glenn Hoddle. I was privileged, and it's sad to see someone that you worship so much who's a bit, not quite a megalomaniac.
What a save. Ramos there failing from 12 yards. And,
I point out the goalkeeper actually took a run up at that. But let's look at the steal. He'll be on the 4 yards out.
3 yards. There you go. Look at that. It's got halfway through, halfway across the 6 yard box. Oh, you wouldn't recall that, would you?
What the assistant is doing there, not flagging that.
Oh, you wouldn't make him retake that now, would you?
Every time. He's got a massive advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual rule change happened in the 1920s. Because there
rule
was a,
change, great.
The thing about goalkeepers staying on their line. Law change, was it? Rule change. It's a game. You don't go to prison for breaking the rules,
hey,
do you?
Look, don't argue with the referee.
Okay, I'll go. Yeah, better not. And this guy used to stand right at the back of his net and then charge from there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, charge from there, out from the back of his net. That's
intimidating.
Yeah, it was great. Oh, I wish I'd seen it. But of course, there's no footage of him actually doing it, but yeah.
Come the end of June, everything seemed to be spiralling out of control. For a start, the UK had just voted to leave the European Union. Then there was England's predictably underwhelming exit from Euro 2016 at the hands of an admirably competent Iceland team. Even the Sound of Football podcast itself was falling apart at the seams, as was heard during episode 262. Replacing the absent Jan Bilton was special guest Nick Wildhagen from BundesligaFanatic.com. But rather embarrassingly, he picked the wrong podcast to witness an accidental crossover into the world of online books. Confused? You will be.
Well, I suppose there's many things we can talk about this week, because apparently a lot went on while I was in Paris.
Yep, this is what happens when you go away.
Yeah, I know. I go away, not even a week. Not even a week. And basically I come back and basically everyone has resigned.
Yes. Everyone's left.
Yes.
Everyone has resigned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Listeners,
well,
Jan,
everyone.
Jan hasn't left. Okay. No, he will be back next week.
Yeah, Roy's resigned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, in fairness, Roy resigned, but his contract was up.
He's just basically not going to turn up, is he?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, they dragged him into the press conference, although he insists he wasn't dragged into the press conference. He said, oh, no, I wasn't dragged in here. But he was like, well, yes, I was. But he kept repeatedly saying, I don't know why I'm here, but I've come on my own free will, even though I've got no idea why.
I think he was holding up a copy of the newspaper, wasn't he?
Yeah, at one point, he was.
Everyone's treating me fine.
I have been well treated.
Yes. Yeah. These people should be released from prison because they are. Nick, did you see? Sorry, I'm going to have to do this again because I'm getting in.
By the way, guys, I you're sort of in and out for me.
Ah.
I can't only hear.
Okay, I'm just gonna, we do have a bit of problem with the mic at the moment. So what I would do is I'll try and fix this. But
chapter 17.
What the?
My dear boy.
Where the fuck did that come from?
It was a large bare room.
Oh, I know where this is coming from. Sorry, Nick, I'm going to have to... We've got some Casino Royale coming through on this.
This is glorious.
Sorry.
This is the best podcast ever.
Where the fuck is that coming from?
Right, okay, right.
They had a pink sofa ranged against the other side of the room. There was no table in the centre under the alabasterine ceiling light. Only a small square of stained carpet with a futurist design.
Shut up! Are you still there, Nick?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, well, did you enjoy that bit of Ian Fleming there?
I love me some Ian Fleming.
Yeah. What the fuck was that?
I wonder if that would get picked up. Will that get picked up?
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, you've got to keep that. You've got to keep that in. You have to use that. It's just amazing. It really, that's just, it's, and so very much in keeping with the times in which we live.
With Euro 2016 down to its final four teams, The Sound of Football drafted in the last of its special guests, Ed Carter from 200%.net. Like Ed, Graham, Jan and Terry were confused and amazed at how Portugal had managed to reach the semi-finals after drawing all three of their group games and scraping past Croatia 1-0 after extra time in the quarter-finals. So, were Portugal possessing an undefinable quality that nobody had identified? Or were they just lucky? Here's Graham to start the debate.
How have Portugal got there? They haven't won a game in 90 minutes, have they?
Correct.
That's right.
They finished third in their group.
Well, exactly. I quite enjoyed the intricacies of the third place in the group thing. It was one of the things which made the 24-team format to be bearable, I think. That said, I am vexed by Portugal getting this far, but not because they finished third in the group, but because they've just been so awful. Mm. I cannot remember a Portuguese team in, I don't know, 20 years that has just been so full of just blokes. I'm used to these sort of bronzed, brill-creamed gods with wonderful names, and now they're just blokes, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if the rest of them have just let themselves go because, with old CR7 like in the limelight all the time. Maybe it's part of his contract. They say, you can't do anything with your hair.
It's possible. I think Nani has circumvented that to some extent. The player that I was particularly interested by in the Portugal team is Ricardo Quaresma, who he's got tattoos on his eyes. Now, as far as I understand my prison tats, if you've got a teardrop under your eye, it means you've killed one person. I'm pretty sure that I saw under his eye during the penalty shootout, he's got a cross under one of his eyes, which I can only assume means that he's crucified one person.
I think that's definitely how it works.
That's definitely what it means.
His name actually means Lent. Yeah,
Lent.
Yeah. And I've been racking my brain for the last 4 days to try and come up with some kind of pancake pun to go with it. But obviously, he's a serial crucifier. Then is he?
He's definitely done. Well, I mean, one's enough, really. It's fair to say that CR7 hasn't had an awful lot of luck on the cross.
This is why we get special guests in, you see. That's brilliant.
Well, of course, Portugal went on to beat France 1-0 in the final after extra time, naturally. And who can forget the anguished face of Cristiano Ronaldo as he left the field injured after just 24 minutes? A sad end to the 31-year-old's tournament, but on the plus side, at least some of the nocturnal inhabitants of the Stade de France found the time to give him their own special send-off, as discussed by Graham, Terry and Jan at Whiteleaf FC.
They lost fair and square, though.
They did, yeah. Ronaldo was immense in that semi-final. Yeah. And I mean, he's earned his place among... I mean, he always had his place among the ages because of the whole of his tremendous skill, but also his the number of medals and trophies that he's won for his club. But, I mean, he's also had the bonus of now playing for a country that's capable of winning a tournament and has now done one. So, his fate is sealed, even though his final was memorable largely because of a nice little kiss he received from a moth while he lay injured and crying. Yeah.
What was going on with all of those moths?
So the story, I think, was that they left the floodlights on overnight the previous night, and that had attracted the moths.
From all of Paris.
All of the Parisian moths all turned up.
Because it was quite warm here that night, and I had my back doors open, and there were no moths.
They were all in Paris. They'd all come to Paris. But I think that's what Clive Tilty said. Yeah. He said that they have, for some reason, they left the floodlights on all night, the previous night, and these moths had just assembled and didn't know where else to go, so they just hung out there.
Mm. I thought that was a joke, because I tweeted, what's with all the moths, and a friend of mine responded back saying some idiot left the floodlights on the night before, and I was...
Right.
Really?
Well, I mean, maybe it surely wasn't, not. But I mean, it's difficult to think of any other. I mean, unless they had a big bag of moths that they unleashed as part of the closing ceremony. I don't know.
Like when they released a load of doves at the start of the Olympics.
Moths of peace.
Yeah. You know what the French are like? They're quite avant-garde, aren't they?
Perhaps it was some kind of tribute to Mothra, yeah. Which, of course, I was disappointed that Mothra didn't make an appearance, but anyway.
I did think there would have been a whole different narrative if all the moths had been there in that match that Switzerland played when their shirts were falling apart.
Yeah, that's a wasted opportunity. That would have been superb. Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
They were just stealth moths.
I think everyone deserves a great deal of credit for not doing too many Inspector Clouseau impressions, because MILFs, you know.
To episode 267 now, and discussion on the EFL trophy. Where previously the competition was open purely to teams in the third and fourth tier of the Football League, the 2016-17 competition saw the net widen to allow 16 Premier League and Championship Academy sides to take part too. From the moment the rule change was announced, there was widespread disapproval among many fans, not only because of the motives behind it, but also because of the apparent lack of thought that had gone into making such an unpopular decision. But could such negativity surrounding the new format actually work in its favour? This and many other points were debated with special guest Gary Andrews, who struggled to put a positive spin on the new EFL trophy.
Well, come on, Gary, you're all about the social media. Is there such thing as bad publicity?
I mean, the fact that you've actually... let's be fair, this competition has had more publicity than it's ever had in the last...
Well, that's very true.
Because this is the first time we've ever talked about trophy on this podcast.
People actually are interested in it, but for the wrong reasons. So, yes, there probably is. I mean, the amount of times we covered this on the old Two-Footed Tackle podcast back in the day, I think I can remember we did it once when we had a Luton Town fan in, and they won the old Johnson Paint Trophy.
Man, I bet that was an easy 10 minutes, wasn't it?
He was a lovely guy, genuinely lovely.
They all are.
Every Luton Town fan I've met has been a really, really lovely person.
Except the guy
same
who's
as Stevenage
in
Crawley. I want to hate you, but I really, really can't at all. As I said at the start, it's a competition that was drowning in apathy anyway, and I think the thing is the people I think who are going to boycott this are not the kind of people, the people who are the real hardcore. Mm. They're the people who are going...
People who would have turned up in the first
place. Yeah, they're the people who would have turned up in the first place.
So there's kind of a natural boycott anyway.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
a lot of people, regular fans, wouldn't bother going to this fixture this time last year or the year before. It's only the serious hardcore.
Yeah. I mean, I think apathy and boycott mean the same thing in football, don't they? Because that's what happens, isn't it? When a club is run badly, you know, there isn't a boycott. It's just people just don't turn up because they're just not interested.
Yeah, they don't say, oh, I've had enough, I'm walking away. It's more like, oh, you know what, I have found something more interesting to do in my time than this. And I suspect that there'll be an element of that about it. But, I mean, you never know.
Football fans can be a disagreeable bunch when they want to be. They can create animosity towards their opposite number, but worse still, they can be cutting with an unsaid dismission of their rivals, or at least those that think they're their rivals. Such was the discussion on episode 269, when rivalries of all kinds were discussed. Graham asked Jan about the intensity of the Tyne Wear derby and the Tyne Tees derby. Unbeknown to us neutrals, Jan was quick to point out the apparent irrelevance of the latter.
I suppose that's what makes the Tyne Wearside derby work so well, because two clubs that have both jumped in and out of the Premier League over the last 40 years or so.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're 11 miles apart, which sounds a lot if you're talking about London, but in the northeast, I suppose, a bit like in East Anglia, there's not a lot between them.
Yeah.
I mean, there are places, but, there's
well,
no
you grew up between them.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And I can tell you from experience, there's nothing there of note. There really isn't. But, I mean, further down the road, obviously, with Middlesbrough, I mean, just looking at it, if you look at it from a Newcastle perspective,
that's
like four 45 miles away.
Yeah.
And it's called the Tees Weir Derby. I mean that is really stretching a point. I mean you've got the point where you could place it. Newcastle could play someone like Heart of Midlothian, and it would be a comparable distance, and that's how crazy it gets.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because the point on snobbery, I think, comes in at that point. And I'm not singling out Newcastle for having that, because Sunderland do as well. And we've absolutely no right to do that at all.
So the snobbery it's not just London. It's an English thing, you're saying. I mean, who would I, for one, am shocked to learn that snobbery exists within English, any aspect of English culture.
Yeah. But I think both Newcastle and Sunderland don't really... Well, we probably do regard the playing Middlesbrough as a derby, but we, to anybody's face that's from Middlesbrough, we just go, it's just another game.
It's just another game to us.
It's not a derby.
That is the ultimate slap in the face. It's not really a big deal, to be perfectly honest. I gave my tickets to a couple of mates at work, so I won't be along. I'm taking the missus out shopping that day.
Furniture shopping.
Indeed.
I'd rather go for
it. You'd be digging your nails into your arms of your chair going, I'm gonna rip your throat out. It's good, it's gratifying to learn that it isn't just a London thing. But obviously I suspect because there's so many team clubs in London that it just seems to be more intensified.
With the 2016-2017 domestic season well underway, the Premier League was more or less playing out in familiar form by the end of September, but West Ham's spirited charge of the previous season was nowhere to be seen. The move to a new stadium was proving to be a little unsettling for the Hammers, not least because a contingent of West Ham fans were intent on standing up, thereby blocking the view of some of those who were seated. But to what extent do fans really want to stand up during a match? And more to the point, how can you do so without incurring the wrath of the stadium officials? An answer to this issue was provided by Jan in episode 270.
When was the last time you stood at a football match that was a top-level football match?
Rather than just at the weekend.
Just at Saturday when you were at Whiteley.
I haven't been to a Sunderland home match for a long time, but when we... well, not that long ago, a couple of seasons. But you're not allowed to stand there. The stewards go mental.
Yeah.
And they come running up the stairs towards like this huge mass of people. They're all standing up and start telling you to sit down. And the people on the periphery start to sit down. And then the cry goes up, stand up if you hate the mags.
Yeah.
And then everyone has to stand up anyway. And the steward, yeah, and the stewards just look stupid and go, well, we can't make them sit down now, can we? Because they hate the mags. So
we're standing up.
We hate the mags as well. So they beat a hasty retreat and then that's it. But I think that chant is only kept going, not because of the hatred of Newcastle, but just so they can stand up.
They need to ban that chant, don't they?
that's
something
next.
Of a standing enabler.
Apparently, it is the go-to chant at West Ham at the moment. Stand up for anything, basically.
For anything whatsoever.
If you like the puns.
Stand up for the sake of it.
Yes.
Stand up for the sake of it.
It is, yes. It's stand up if you watch the Olympics.
Stand up if you think the Bake Off move to Channel 4 was a bad idea.
And it doesn't scan very well.
It doesn't, you'll get a lot of people standing.
I bet they all do. I bet the stewards don't mind a bit.
Nope, not at all. Not at
everyone,
all.
Everyone loves Bake Off, that's why.
Later in that same episode, Terry wondered whether the owners of West Ham United had an ulterior motive for encouraging a less demonstrative type of fan to the London Stadium. Were they reprofiling the club in order to be bought out by new owners, and if so, who could say what the new owners would be like? More to the point, was West Ham's move to a new stadium becoming just a huge fallacy?
I think they're vulnerable. Vulnerable to ne'er-do-wells and wrong-uns.
Rather than the dildo salesman they've got there.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And as a resident of Whiteleaf, Graham...
Yes, we know, yes.
Given how much employment...
it gives
to the local areas, we are, you should be the last person to... the second to last person to complain.
On that note, I have to say...
Hello.
Suddenly, turning left.
The steward of that game took a 6-foot penis off the Sunderland football fans because it was Dick Advocaat's first game in charge.
Right.
So they took our dick off us under the watchful gaze of the dildo selling owner.
Well, you know why? You know why? It's like at the World Cup, if you try and drink any other beer other than Budweiser, you see. That's if you're not exactly using the their dildos. Thing.
David Cole probably David
get Cole, rid of that cock.
David Cole probably looked at that blow up dick and went, "You call that a dick? I don't think so. I'll show you an inflatable dick, mate." So the Sunderland fans were genuinely advocating dick, were they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, everyone was waving dicks around.
Good to know.
Most of them inflatable.
Yeah, I mean, I think taking away the inflatable one would have been the worst thing you could have done. You're just asking for trouble. Well, what am I doing now?
I genuinely didn't think that I'd be talking about this.
Well, it did take a turn, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah, maybe we can steer it back onto the
I'm having loads of fun.
Yeah, I know, but we spend about 10 minutes a week talking about dicks anyway. So yeah. I don't know why we've got onto this one.
Throughout much of October, Graham was away on holiday in the United States, so the job of bringing you your weekly half-hour of football chat fell to Terry and Jan. Their first two podcasts covered a wide range of topics, including Sam Allardyce's replacement in the England hot seat by Gareth Southgate, and Man United and Liverpool's struggle to return to their prolific form of years gone by. For their third podcast, however, they relocated to a park in South London to talk about the Saturday afternoon blackout of live football on British TV. But in talking about the ability to watch football via any number of dubious sources on the internet, the cracks were showing all too clearly as Terry and Jan awaited Graham's return. Well, that's what I read into Jan's all too literal response to one of Terry's questions.
Do you use live streams from time to time on the internet, John, if you're at home on a Saturday and you have nothing else to do?
Occasionally.
Hmm. How do you find them?
Well, Google's your friend.
No, I mean, no, I don't mean how do you find them. I mean, how do you find them. I mean, how do you find them?
It's like, have you never heard of internet search engines, Terry? I always thought, what a bizarre question. No. That's the importance of intonation. Man.
I mean, how do you find them? Not how do you find them.
Well, once I've found them on Google, how do I find them? Well, they're hit and miss, more miss, because the quality is terrible. There tends to be ads all over the place, and I'm always concerned about what it's actually doing to my computer. And I have the worst computer in the world, but I'm still concerned about what's actually going on inside of it, because it's full of malware, isn't it?
That's what they say. I mean, whenever I've used them, I can't say as I've ever had any problem in that respect, in terms of malware, but at the same time, I find them clunky and difficult to use. I'm probably at an age also where I'm not instinctively tuned into how these things work. I can't help but think that my 20-year-old me would probably be more au fait with them, more across them, and would probably be more inclined to use them. The problem, of course, is that nobody has really been able to do a study and find out from these people who use illegal streams on the internet whether or not they would actually, if they weren't able to do that, whether or not they would be going to another football match instead of that.
Sadly, Jan wasn't around for episode 276. They're always away on holiday, this Sound of Football. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, what would happen if I went on holiday when this show had to be recorded? Yes, well, anyway, where was I? Yes, episode 276, which was recorded just before the World Cup qualifier between England and Scotland at Wembley. Unfortunately, all the pre-match talk in the press wasn't about the historic rerunning of the world's oldest international football fixture, or even the fact that Scotland will be wearing bright pink shirts for the occasion. There was plenty enough of that on Twitter. No, the tabloid press were busy whipping up a frenzy over the scandalous decision by FIFA to ban England and Scotland's players from sporting a poppy on their shirts. But with Britain already reeling from the decision to leave the European Union, the last thing anyone needed was to combine the two issues to sell a few extra newspapers.
The thing I'm loving is the actual language that they're using it here, and especially about with the fact of like defiance of FIFA, like especially the line of like, oh well, they should put their own ass in order first, shouldn't they?
Right. Yeah.
That's a lovely trope.
Yeah,
isn't
we
it?
Always love that's a yeah.
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 But the whole language that they're being is this they're trying to use the let's take back control language.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this whole thing of like we'll take the points thing. Well, we don't care. Like yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
we'll take the hit.
Yeah.
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 Don't care who it affects.
Yeah. Because you know? we're remembering. We are. Yeah. You know. We're respecting.
We're remembering.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, if it weren't for us, you'd be speaking German now.
Yeah. That's the subtext of all of this.
Of course it is.
And it's
yeah.
the same old tedious tropes that we have
yeah.
from our fellow countrymen who yes. are labour under the assumption that everybody would be speaking German if it wasn't for us.
Yeah, and yeah, we're going to have new trade deals with India, even though we don't own them anymore.
Yeah, because that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Take a swig of beer, shall
I think we should have a bit of a stretch out, you know. I'm glad Jan's not here, actually. I mean,
it'd be difficult because he's such a horrific Tory.
Oh, God, he is, isn't he?
Frightful.
I know.
He plays up like he's not.
I know.
He's transparent.
He's like the bloody Katie Hopkins of this bloody podcast, isn't he?
Some of the things he says when, you know, some of the stuff you have to edit out.
I know.
Shocking.
I know. Well, the thing is as well, the worst thing, you know, is he's got the bloody, like Trump permatan now.
Yes.
Isn't he? He's gone full on it, hasn't
he? Yeah, absolutely.
And that dodgy comb over thing he's got.
He's working on it.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. He used to be cool, that guy.
He did used to be cool. Yeah. Well. I don't know. Was it us? Did we change it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I think,
it does happen with friends of ours. We were the last one who used to be on a show, ended up going and moving to fucking New Zealand.
Yeah, he took back control.
He took back control. Yeah. Albeit by moving to the other side of the world. Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he said something like Britain's full or something like that before.
Yeah, I didn't so much take back control, Graham, as get out while the going was good. At the start of the 2016-17 season, Celtic Football Club converted part of their Celtic Park Stadium into a safe standing area. Many other clubs around the UK showed an interest with a view to possibly doing the same thing, although the likelihood of safe standing areas being reintroduced to English football grounds sometime soon remains rather distant. Historically speaking, the image of fans standing up to watch football inside a stadium is invariably linked with the dark days of hooliganism during the 1970s and 80s. On the continent, however, the volatile behaviour of football fans is illuminated by its own specific connection with fireworks and flares. If only Terry's Uncle Frank was in charge of security at Europe's football grounds.
On the mainland, pyrotechnics are very much part of the culture, but they are also increasingly more discouraged by the football authorities. There's been some quite heated disputes between fan groups and the DFB in Germany about the use of pyrotechnics.
Mm-hmm.
And every time there's an accident or somebody gets carried away with a pyro and someone almost gets hit with one or one ends up in the wrong part of the ground, then, you know, it's jumped on by the DFB, and I'm bound to say to a degree by some of the more sensationalist German media, as being symptomatic of a broader problem, and then fan groups will then protest and say, look, this happens all the time. Mm. There's pyros go on all the time, and very rarely do anything like this happen, and it's part of our thing, and you shouldn't take it away. So I think, if anything, that I'm not certain whether the trend of pyro over here is going to really catch on. We're all too across our firework code.
Well, that's the thing. I was just thinking, in Germany, they don't have Guy Fawkes Night, so therefore they didn't have an entire decade full of public information films.
They don't. No.
So therefore,
they
your
Carnival
average.
But
your average football fan here, he's not going to pick up a sparkler, is he?
Yeah.
It's not going
to
happen.
We all know that you have to hold your sparkler at arm. It's all been drained. It's all been ingrained into us from a very early age. And maybe that's the thing. That was the thing that John Hartley said on this podcast. He was talking about this experience of Carnival in Cologne, his first experience, and they were all mad, and they were all just like shooting Roman candles at each other and lusting fireworks around, grown adults, you know. I mean,
just shivered on my spine.
Just thinking, what are you doing? You know, I mean, it's funny, but I mean, at the same time, goodness knows what.
Where's your biscuit tin? Oh, God.
That doesn't happen over here.
No.
My Uncle Frank and his next-door neighbour's pampas grasses will...
Next-door neighbour's pampas grasses.
My Uncle Frank, a Roman candle, and next-door's pampas grass.
There's a joke in that.
and lots of saucepans full of water.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Heading into the final month of the year, the FA Cup's second round witnessed one of the great comebacks of recent times as AFC Wimbledon battled back from being 3-0 down against non-league Curzon Ashton with half an hour to go to win the match 4-3. It brought to mind many memories of other great comebacks witnessed by the Sound of Football team, starting off with one suffered by Arsenal in 2011 as described by Graham.
But I think probably the hardest one I remember is the 4-4 against Newcastle in recent memory. That was really, really rough. Mm. We were 4-0 up in that game. Then Abu Diaby got sent off.
Abu Diaby.
Yeah, he got sent off. And then they got 4 goals back. And it finished 4-4.
Mm.
And that was gutting.
Mm.
And it really was. And the thing was, it was the Newcastle side that had Joey Barton playing it. He scored a couple of penalties. So, you know, you've got
people. You feel unclean, doesn't
it? Yeah, we had. It was him and Kevin Nolan were playing in that bloody side as well. Mm. Cech Tiota, who never, ever, ever scored again, I don't think, when he had scored. But, yeah, he scored a bloody worldie from the halfway line. It's just,
I wasn't at the stadium for the Liverpool game under Tony Pulis when we were 3-0 down and came storming back to draw that game. That's probably the most recent positive comeback that I can think of that Palace were involved in. And it was a bit of a shame, but I will confess, since we're confessing about missing great comebacks, I went and had a bath after the third goal went in. Wow. It was on the telly, obviously. I wasn't at the ground. That would have been very strange.
Didn't go downstairs and I just thought, into the baths.
Right, bollocks to this.
I need to clean myself.
I'm going to go to work tomorrow. I'm going to go and have a bath. And then when I came out, it was 3-3. And I felt dirty all over again.
Did you have to go and have a shower?
I had to go and have a shower after that.
You said that I'm never going to be clean now.
I didn't realise this podcast would then suddenly turn into a confessional.
I think it's
bad
quite...
football fandom. Bad football watching.
Hey, you know, like we always say, there's no right or wrong way to watch football, is there? Or to like football.
Well, so we think.
However, we do feel guilty
that's
about
that's an atrocious way to watch football.
And so to the very last episode of The Sound of Football for 2016, which, as ever, was the annual Advent Calendar edition. So many people and things hiding behind all those doors, each one waiting to be opened by Graham, Jan and Terry. But what was behind the very last door? Let's take a look.
Oh, big door.
It's a very big door.
It's a very big door. It's for a very big country.
Huge country.
It's China.
It is.
China.
It's China.
Oh.
Massive country. Massive potential.
Massive money.
Massive money.
Massive population.
Yeah.
Which I think is possibly part of their problem.
Yeah.
So difficult to organise so many people into some kind of coherent strategy for winning football matches. Which I assume is, to a large degree, what most of this is all about. It's all about acquiring football knowledge and then using it to win the World Cup.
To host the World Cup. And then to win it.
And then to win it.
Now, they're not going to 2018.
No.
They got beaten by Syria.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a measure of how much work they've got to do.
Yeah, that is a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but they have got lots and lots of... The president of China wants China to have a successful football team.
Yeah.
And if he wants it, then there's lots and lots of very, very rich business people within China who think... Well, I think I'm gonna try and get that for it.
There's some juicy government contracts in the offing if I can please the president.
Yeah,
yeah. It's that'll be. But Chairman Mao wanted China to be the best at table tennis, and they were.
Yeah,
it's not out of the question that this could happen. But of course, football is played with 22 people and not with 2 people. So,
yeah. Well, we've already seen in this conversation already about how they're investing in clubs over here.
Yeah. Yep.
But they're also investing in players and taking them over there. You've already said Oscar's going over there. He's 25 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of speculation in the press. Disbelief in the press by the good people of the media to say, why on earth would he be going out to China?
Well, let's think about
for
that.
For all that money.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Why isn't he happy just to sit on the bench and because he hasn't started since the middle of September?
Yeah, yeah. With his increasingly devaluing wage packet.
Yes. Yeah. Why would he want to leave?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is a complete no-brainer. If we were asked to do a podcast on Chinese football, and they were offered us millions of pounds to do it,
or even just a million,
yes, just a million, if you're listening, I believe we might say yes.
Yeah,
I believe we might say yes.
I'd say yes.
Jan would say yes. He's on record as saying yes.
I'm going.
Yeah.
the official podcast of the People's Republic of China.
Yeah, that's got a nice ring to it.
It has, doesn't it?
Yeah,
really?
It has. Yeah. Don't you agree, people of China?
Yes.
And that's it. Another review of The Sound of Football Year is finally at an end. On behalf of the team, our grateful thanks go to Andy Rockall, Nick Vilhagen, Ed Carter and Gary Andrews for their participation during 2016. And as ever, it just leaves me to remind you that you can catch up with every episode of the Sound of Football podcast by visiting sofpodcast.com. My name's Chris Oakley. This has been the best of the Sound of Football 2016. But before we go, let's play out with a special musical treat. And I use the word treat quite wrongly. Following on from last season's Gegenpressing, which went gold in Tajikistan, here's Terry DeFellin's new CD release, We All Live in a Global World. Take it away, Terry.
We all live in a global world. It's a world that's global around. When will people learn that our world is global?
Oh, what a shame. And just when I was starting to enjoy it too. Goodbye.